Rob Wolf, Andy Dees back with episode 39, Paleolithic Solution. We are almost to the big 4-0.
Dude, we have more podcasts now than I am old, which is good. That's good.
Does that make you feel younger, Rob?
It would if I wasn't still beat up from the Move Nat thing and then jiu-jitsu last night. Bruno Lima is going to be gone for a month, and so he absolutely beat the tar out of me last night. So I'm feeling about 85, like 85 chain smoker, hard drinking 85 today. So, yeah.
Well, you know, this way you can recover for the full month and maybe we'll be ready to go by the time Bruno gets back.
Yeah, and what little work capacity I built will be completely gone. Awesome.
So I know on your blog you wrote a series of posts from the jungle or the mountains of West Virginia, whichever it may be. So tell us a little bit about the MoveNat seminar you went to.
You know, it was phenomenal. I knew, like, Erwan and I have talked a bunch over the last couple of months via email, on Skype, on the phone, and he's just a very, very bright guy, very passionate about what he's doing. And obviously has some pretty amazing physical capacity. And so I knew I was going to learn some stuff going into this, but I honestly, like, I was shocked by how good of an eye for movement, prehab, rehab that Erwan has. I was also really surprised by some of the immediate improvements in my own performance, just largely related to like some proprioceptive issues in my ankles from numerous kind of ankle rolls from like snowboarding and kickboxing and different stuff like that. And it really helped a bunch. Like I was shocked. And despite the bug bites and the scratches and we got chased and stung by hornets on one day when we were trying to work our way down to the lake that was about 2.5 miles away. Despite all that stuff, which was fairly uncomfortable, you know, I miss it this week. Like, it was a whole lot of learning. It's really nice receiving coaching. Like, I just provide a lot of coaching, and it's really rare that I get feedback on my own movement. Have somebody that I can ask questions that has some insight into what I have going on with my own game. Like, I was asking him about different ways to modify the MoveNat principles to improve my jiu-jitsu game and stuff like that. And it was really, really fun. It was really refreshing. And I knew I was going to like it, but honestly, I'm surprised how much I did, in fact, like it. And definitely looking at going to the probably the January Thailand gig if everything falls into place. So it was a good time, really good time, really good coaching. Definitely have some new tricks to put into my tool bag, but even beyond that, like, had some kind of perceptual changes in how to tackle training. So it was cool.
Rob.
Hey.
Holy shnikes, dude. Okay. There was some craziness, Rob. We're back. We'll edit it out. We're fine. It was live. Your MoveNat thing was good. So you were saying you're thinking about going to the Thailand one.
Yeah. Thinking about going to the Thailand one if everything falls into place. Probably January module on that. And there's a potential of doing some stuff in Australia and New Zealand as well. And would probably dovetail that into some Paleolithic Solution seminars also. So good stuff. Like, very... very excited about tinkering with all the MoveNat stuff further and integrating it into the game plan.
Uh-oh. And did you do your barefoot run through the hills?
Yeah. Like, the final day was, it was pretty insane. Like, barefoot running through the just West Virginia forest, which, I mean, it sticks and twigs and thorns, and we dove through a mud bog, and it was fairly crazy. But that was one of the things, like, I'm shocked that I was able to do it. Like, there was definitely a lot of discomfort with it, but at the end of it, it was one of those things where you're like, wow, that was pretty impressive. I'm surprised that I was able to nut up and get all that done. So it was actually pretty cool.
Very cool. And Rob, since this is the first episode post CrossFit Games that we're recording, and you're recording from your office with the echo, like like we're in Real Genius and Kent is being talked to from God via the microphone in a receiver in his teeth. Give us your thoughts on the CrossFit Games, Rob Wolf.
You know, I didn't get, obviously, I totally struck out on my predictions of handstand walking and bicycles, so I totally struck out on that. I only caught a little bit, like I caught the huge Helen workout where they did a full Helen, two-thirds of a Helen, and then one round of Helen. I saw that one, and then I saw one chunk of the final where people were like falling off the rope and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's pretty impressive. I mean, the infrastructure that they put into place with regards to the media and all that is remarkable. That was pretty cool. You know, the athletic performance is obviously totally remarkable. Huge output going on, but I just didn't get a chance to tune in for a ton of it. But it'll be interesting to see how all that stuff develops. You know, like the strongman, I think, is compelling in that you've got some like freakishly big dudes, and you have some very easy to understand events. You know, like you flip over some small cars, you pick up a refrigerator and run with it, and stuff like that. And most of the events are pretty short. You know, I think typically under a minute, you know, maybe 2 minutes max, something like that. But they're typically on the short end. They're heavy. It's impressive. And I think for so many people, a lot of the CrossFit stuff, like seeing somebody run, do a ton of kipping pull-ups and swing kettlebells, I mean, it is abject misery. Like, until you do that stuff, you don't understand just how hard it is. But I'm curious how much of a draw it will be to folks that are not doing this type of training. And granted, like the number of people doing this type of training is growing every day, and so it may be just fine simply serving that kind of niche market, which eventually becomes not really a niche. It may become quite large, but some elements of it are kind of like, okay, I'm checking it out. I could come back like 5 minutes later and people are still running, they're still doing pull-ups, they're still swinging kettlebells, and so it'll be interesting to see how they tweak and modify that stuff to play to a visual media market. You know, like football has modified a lot of how it operates to play itself to like advertising and short attention span and all that sort of stuff. MMA modified its approach, so like if there's a too much time spent on the ground and people not really trying to advance what they're up, you know, what they're doing, then they stand them back up. So it'll be interesting to see how that the sport of fitness develops over time.
Yep.
You checked out a little bit of it.
Oh, I watched every minute, Rob.
You did? Okay.
Pretty much. I'm a sucker for punishment. I mean, one, I thought it was fascinating that it was all available in HD for free online. Like, that was pretty cool. It struck me, just totally unrelated to the event, you know, how challenging it is for people to actually commentate sports. And, you know, nothing against any of the commentators, but obviously these aren't professional commentators that do this every day. And so, you know, watching them commentate like the affiliate cup fireman's carries across the field was just one of the funniest things I've ever watched. Because there's only so many things you could say about carrying someone across the field running. And it was just very humorous to watch. But, right. You know, I thought it was entertaining. Obviously amazing athletes. I still struggle with the idea of, you know, what competition should look like versus training, and that clearly was competition, and I'm not sure everyone else's training should look exactly like that. So I have all these kind of thoughts always rolling in my head around that. But, you know, amazing athletes, amazing work output, some stunning form flaws repeated thousands of times over, which I question the long-term intelligence of that. But it was a cool event, and it's amazing just to see how much it's grown just from, you know, the ranch to, you know, all the commentators wearing Under Armour shirts and Progenics logos. And I did really enjoy, like, a couple of the events, like the sandbag event where they had to climb up into the stands and pull down the sandbags and run them across the floor of the stadium and then up into the other side. And I did enjoy, you know, even though I thought the final event kind of with the three little wads might have been excessive in length, like I appreciated them adding some new challenges with, you know, climbing over the wall and then the rope climb paired with the burpees where you had to kind of jump over that 6-foot military wall. Like, I thought those were were cool events that clearly folks hadn't specifically trained for. And so mm-hmm. I thought that added a new dynamic, different than, you know, the one like the deadlift, you know, pistol, double under wad, which is kind of standard in CrossFit, even though you don't see that many pistols. But I know, you know, a fair amount of people spend time working on those. So I think it's just interesting to see some of the transfer, if there is any, you know, because I feel like some of those events that people aren't training for are certainly favoring, you know, raw athleticism in some cases. You know, it's not really going to matter in some ways how they've trained.
What the skill set is, yeah. Well, I can definitely say after the MoveNat weekend, like there are huge variables in efficiency and technique getting on, over, and around objects, and there's a whole world waiting for a lot of people to learn how to streamline that type of stuff. It's having watched that and then done that weekend at the expansion course, it'll be interesting to see who starts broadening out their skill set and who they go to for coaching to figure their games out, because there are some things that could be dropped in. Like we saw this and you mentioned it, you know, like the guy was heading into the finals doing really well and then didn't really have rope climbs.
Yep.
and was done. I think Nico had some problems with some double unders and he was done. You know, there are some macro climbing, odd object lifting, surmounting, getting on or around them and stuff like that, that now I could easily program into an event that would shut down 80% of people. But then the people who have the skill set, they'd be fine. And I mean, it makes the technicality of simply doing a ring muscle up, which if you're pretty athletic, you can kind of figure out how to do it. It makes that technicality look kind of infantile. So there's a wide world of stuff waiting to be unleashed on people, and it's very, very interesting. It'll be cool to see where it goes.
Yeah, and I think that's where I always enjoy like watching. I don't know if you've ever seen, Rob, the Ninja Warrior series on G4. But you know, similar in that, you know, some of the events they're climbing and stuff, you know, their work output probably isn't as high, but some of the demands of figuring out the courses that they're having to climb under duress is totally different than, you know, 15 muscle-ups in a row. Obviously, 15 muscle-ups in a row is impressive, but it's just a different thing, you know, climbing on apparatuses or trees or rocks as opposed to, you know, some standard apparatus that you've done 1,000 times over practicing.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, usually if you look at, I think in Japan they call it Sasuke, and then Ninja Warrior here, most of those events have a cap in the time, and they tend to be about a minute and a half to 3 minutes, which is just about where, even though people aren't doing a ton, you know, like you said, say like 15 muscle-ups in a row, they are doing enough work output that they're going to be real heavy into that lactate red line. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that they are doing is of a technical enough nature that you really need to know what you're doing to be able to pull it off. I mean, it ends up shutting down like world champion gymnasts and a lot of different folks. If they're not getting a little bit of specificity in those movements, people end up failing. It's pretty interesting.
Yep. All right, Rob, we're 15 minutes in. We're making progress. Oh, on to the questions.
We've done nothing substantive or of quality yet. So
we added value to the CrossFit Games commentary, and you shared some thoughts on the MoveNat seminar, and I feel like that's a win. I mean, that's good content, Rob.
I'm sure HQ will be very pleased by that.
All right, Rob, first question from Nick. He says, I'm about a month into changing to paleo diet and seeing good results so far. I've been slowly working my way through your older podcasts, and I heard you mention that you're opposed to liquid drinks due to the spike in insulin associated with them. I was wondering if you could expand on that specifically in regard to green smoothies. I've been preparing these myself as a way to get in more veggies with a meal, as well as spiking them with fish oil, since taking shots of oil doesn't work for me. Even in small quantities, I gag it back up. A typical smoothie recipe for me would be 10 ounces of some form of frozen berries, 16 ounces of veggies, one avocado for smoother texture, tablespoon of cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon vanilla bean, and water to thin it out if it's too thick. Typically, I'll drink a glass of this with my meal and add a tablespoon of Carlson's fish oil, since that's pretty much the only way I've figured out how to get it down. Does liquefying the food in a blender end up making it more insulin spiking, or was that said more in regards to juicing? Thanks.
Really good question, really interesting question. Any time that we process food at all, it increases the glycemic load. It speeds up how quickly we're going to absorb those nutrients. So even if we take just like a piece of steak and we eat that steak, the speed with which those proteins enter our system, the amino acids enter our system, is going to be at one rate. If we grind that steak into hamburger, it's going to enter our system faster. If we take that whole thing, and I think somebody mentioned a couple of podcasts back, like some sort of like beef protein powder, where they actually like turn, you know, essentially like steak into protein powder, that hits our system even more quickly. So it's the difference between like a log and kindling and a handful of sawdust. Like the more that you process it, the quicker the stuff burns, essentially. So, you know, the concern that I have with this is the glycemic load and how quickly this stuff ends up hitting the system. If you are lean, you don't have any signs and symptoms of hyperinsulinism, you don't have any blood sugar crashes after doing something like this, then I guess go for it. I mean, the composition that's going in here looks pretty darn good. A cucumber smoothie seems odd to me in some ways, but you know, it, when I'm looking at the cinnamon and the berries, it probably tastes okay and all that. So, all that stuff said, the absolutely processing your food increases the insulin load, the glycemic load. There's no doubt about that. As to whether or not that's a horrible thing for you to do, that's very dependent on what your situation is. It's not something I personally would do all that much, but you know, you could certainly play with it and see how it goes.
Yeah, I don't know if I could get this down.
I would give it a shot. I mean, I've drank enough odd stuff. I would probably give it a shot. Yeah.
But, I mean, I do understand Nick's issue with regards to it, especially if you're not one that likes to eat a lot of veggies, this is a way to actually, you know, to get a fair amount down quicker.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you pointed out, it's very different than eating the food. It'd be hard to eat that many veggies in a reasonable amount of time.
Right. Or you could just go the Kurt Harris route, which is, you know, grass-fed meat, pastured dairy, you know, butter and, you know, get your vegetables in the form of meat. So,
it's my preferred approach.
Seriously.
Confirmation bias all around. All right. Next, we had a question from Dan. Excited about this question. Rob, I've listened to your recent recommendations regarding NOW superenzymes and how to determine dosing. I've recently started taking them, increasing one tablet each meal. I've gotten to seven tablets with no warm or fuzzy feeling. According to Poliquin, if you get to seven with no warm feeling, stop the test. You are acloridic. I have searched far and wide, however, and can find no recommendation as to what I should do now. Is Poliquin right? And if so, what do I do from here, i.e., what is the treatment for acloridia?
You can tackle this a couple of different ways. One, you try to find a doc who specializes in acloridia, and typically what they are going to do, they're going to do a thorough investigation with regards to your digestive health, like an ONP, an ova and parasite. They're going to probably do some scoping to make sure that you don't have any type of a parasitic or like bacterial infection or something like that, because those situations can impact your digestion. And then short of that, like my opinion is that still using something like the NOW Food Super Enzymes to support your digestion as best you can, but probably keeping the dosage at about like 4 to 5 capsules. And then you need to be really fastidious about your sleep, about training, about chewing your food very, very well, about not overeating. So those are the things that you would do. You're basically going to tackle this as you do everything that you possibly can to make your digestion better. And you know, we were just talking about like smoothies and stuff like that. So maybe this is a situation where you do make some vegetable smoothies, you know, like if you're going to get some veggies or you do a soup, you do puree it, but you still need to chew it. You need to chew that pureed food, or that at least somewhat processed food. Say, like if you make soups and stews, you need to chew it as if it was solid food. And this can be somewhat mind-numbingly boring for people, but it will work. And over time, you should be able to reestablish some digestive fire. Cutting out things like iced water, not drinking liquids with meals, those things will definitely help your digestion also. But there are some docs you need to poke around to find them that may help with achloridia. But on the kind of practical implementation side, it really boils down to make the foods that you're digesting, consume them in a way that maximally supports the whole operation. Don't overeat. Make sure you have some nice, relaxed environment. Chew the food really well, all that sort of stuff. No cold beverages with it. Really not much extra fluid at all, because all that tends to dilute digestive enzymes, stuff times.
Yep. All right, good. Good question. Next, got a question.
Yeah. And Dan, if Dan's here with that, it would definitely be cool to hear back an improvement in the signs and symptoms and all that. Yeah.
Next, I got a question from Gary. Rob, do you have any information on the validity of the ELISA method of food allergy testing? I recently had a food allergy panel done. In addition to telling me that I should avoid eggs, it also says I should avoid beef, which plays a major role in my current diet. Love the show, and I'm looking forward to the book.
Yeah, ELISA testing is legit, and this is where we see some things like eggs. We've kind of understood from some previous podcasts, from some work that Professor Cordain has done, they do pose a little bit of a gut irritation potential. That there are some proteins in the eggs similar to grains and legumes that can pose some problems to people. So that's not super surprising for, to see some egg allergy. But then you see some wacky things for a lot of people, like chicken and beef and stuff like that. Where those allergies grow from is we're consuming other foods, say like grains, legumes, dairy, that cause the initial damage to the gut lining. And then that allows us to then take in intact food particles of things that we normally wouldn't become allergic to. Beef, chicken, watermelon, different things like that. For a lot of people, if they address the gut damage very, very thoroughly, then things like a beef allergy should kind of go into remission, should decrease. And this is another really strong argument for some rotation in your food supply. So say like you do a week or so of beef, a week or so of lamb, a week or so of chicken, seafood, pork, and then you come back around to beef. And Ito is very big into this. Polikin is very big into this. Czech is pretty big into this. So it makes sense. In implementation, it can be kind of tough to pull off. But if you have you obviously are positive on the ELISA test for some food allergies. If you want to address this, then a really being pretty fastidious about your rotation of your food would definitely help. So that when that beef does pop back up again, you only have an exposure for a certain period of time, and then you pull it out of rotation.
Yeah, it's very depressing when they tell you you can't eat beef. I love beef, Rob.
Well, the vegetarians do that all the time. So.
good question. Next, we got a question from Rito, longtime follower, CrossFitter, and caveman. Love your stuff. Pre-ordered the book. Keep up the good work. Wondering if you've seen this study and news article. I'm guessing your main criticism will be the whole protein quality, omega-6, omega-3 ratio, Intuit paradox thing, but still interested in what your thoughts are. Cheers. So Rito provided a link to a abstract and then also a related article from the BBC that basically says eating less meat may be the key to keeping a healthy weight.
Oh, man.
Rob Wolf.
It seems like I may not be able to maintain non-cursing. We may need some bleeps. Heather Dalton may need to cover her kids' ears here in a minute. It seems like, I don't know, once every 6 months, once a year, one of these things pops up. I think it was maybe 16, 18 months ago was like, meat causes cancer. And everybody was all in a fizz about this. I'm like, Rob, what do you think about this? And it was the same damn deal. It was a bunch of questionnaires. It's a big data set, but it's from food questionnaires, which are horrifically inaccurate. And when they, when that previous study was analyzed, they were considering meat, you know, in quotations, meat. If you ate pizza that had sausage on it, then the whole caloric content of that thing was considered meat. And so this stuff is just ridiculous. Like, show me a mechanism on this. What is the mechanism of action that meat makes you fat, that meat causes cancer? You know, whatever the deal is. And so these correlative studies are not worth the paper they're printed on. Like, you literally should line a birdcage with them or wipe your fanny with them. Like, there is no compelling evidence here at all. Like, we need some sort of, if these people feel that there is compelling evidence at the end of this, they must recommend a proposed mechanism of action, period. Like, these correlative studies just spin shit out. Like, all it does is it keeps these researchers fed and watered and tenured so that they can just keep crunching and crunching data that really doesn't tell us anything at all. If you don't propose a mechanism, if there's not something testable here that we could take into a clinical setting, there is no value to it at all. And that's just kind of the beginning and the end of the whole thing. Like, this stuff pops up again and again and again. And then when we really, even on the statistical analysis, this is what happened with the previous situation where, you know, theoretically meat was causing cancer. Then some statisticians got in and really started looking at the way that they were cooking the data. And it was fallacious at best, you know, it was, again, stuff like considering pizza as meat just because it had some meat product on it. It's just ridiculous. But, you know, it's newsworthy, and we're just going to continue to see stuff like this. But if there's not a proposed mechanism associated with these things, it's worthless, in my opinion. Absolutely worthless.
So this reminds me of all the recent blogging about...